Committee on Public Properties, Land Use, and Community Affairs comes to order at 6:40 PM. We have acceptance of the minutes from the committee meeting held on December 4th, 2023. Do we have a motion?
Move favorable action.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
First, for second passage, this is Council President McAllister on behalf of Mayor Picozzi. PCO 21-22, an ordinance amending the zoning ordinance of the City of Warwick to implement the comprehensive plan by changing the zoning of certain residential properties to open space. City of Warwick petitioner, citywide, multiple locations. Council President? Oh, let's see. I know Council President favored favorable action on this item. Let's see, do we have discussion? Members of the committee? Nope. Members of the council?
Nope.
Members of the public? Please step up to the mic, and you might need to turn the mic on.
Testing, good. Michelle Comar, Ward 1. I know I sent an email to everyone today with some suggested amendments, but before I get into that, there's two, I'll call it procedural issues.
If I may interrupt, is this regarding the changing of properties from residential to open space?
No.
Okay, that's the item that we're currently on.
So sorry. That's our second passage as well. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Okay.
I'll speak in favor of that right now, though.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any public comment? PCO 21-22. Hearing none, do we have a motion?
Favorable action.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Item 2 of 3 on the agenda, we have PCO 23-23. That's not a typo. It is PCO 23-23, an ordinance amending the zoning ordinance of the City of Warwick. Glenn Taylor and Mary Miga Taylor, petitioners, assessors plat 365, lot 166, commonly known as 49 Arnold's Neck Drive. This is Council President McAllister. It's for second passage. And yes, I'm hearing off mic, request favorable action for second passage. Any further discussion, members of the committee?
No.
Members of the council?
Nothing to say.
And I know that there had been discussion at the time of first passage. Is there any public comment, members of the public, PCO 23-23? Hearing none, do we have a motion?
Move favorable action.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, and the last item on the agenda, this is PCO 24-23 sub A, an ordinance amending Appendix A, zoning ordinance of the City of Warwick to conform with procedural and substantive changes in state land use laws, modify land uses and districts, and delete superfluous sections codified in the State Building Code. City of Warwick petitioner, citywide. Council President McAllister on behalf of Mayor Picozzi, do we have a recommendation on PCO 24-23 sub A?
Favorable
action. So any further comment or discussion, members of the committee?
No, thank you.
Members of the council and members of the public.
Thank you, Michelle Comar. So I emailed some proposed amendments, but I first want to get into, I'll call them procedural issues. And one is a memo from the solicitor for the planning board. The law firm wrote a memo in July of 2023. With a caution for special use permits. And I just want to read what it says, and then I'm going to ask a question. So I'm only going to read the section pertaining to special use permits. It says, for special use permits, And the heading is all the different laws that were passed in the House. They give the House numbers. For special use permits, zoning ordinances must now contain specific and objective criteria for each, I want to stress that word, each, category of special use. The absence of specific and objective criteria in the ordinance shall make the use permitted by right. So where we see an S in the use table, that would just be a Y. So it's an automatic permitted by right. If we don't have these criteria spelled out for each category. So what I saw in our ordinance, the changes were a list. Correct me if I'm wrong, please, anyone, that pertained to any S in the table. Now, what brought this to my attention was my friend from Cranston called me. Cranston's going through the same thing, like everyone else is in municipalities in Rhode Island. And they're changing all their S's to a no because they don't have the list for each S, not a running general list like we have for each S in the table. So they're behind us in schedule. They're having their hearing for the ordinance committee tomorrow night, and they still have to do two passages before, I guess, January 1st. They may be late. So my question here, and I have one other procedural question, and then I'll take a break for answers. In reading this memo from the law firm hired by the planning board, we're supposed to have specific and objective criteria for each S, not a general list like we have. And what we could lose is anything with a S, which would get more scrutiny through the approval process, becomes an automatic by right yes. The second procedural thing is, and I didn't go one for one in looking and comparing the first passage ordinance versus the second passage ordinance, but there's a section missing. And in first passage, there was a change in red, and now the whole section's gone, and it's deals with historic districts and the historic commission. So what's missing is from, I think the last thing is we have section 311.1 all the way down to section 4. All that text is wiped out, gone, missing in the version that you're voting on tonight. So my question is, how can, and unless this was an amendment, but it doesn't show the change. It's just gone. And I'm looking for blue and red, but the text is just missing. Solicitor, you seem to want to answer that now. I'll take a break. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, if I may. Regarding the second question posed, it's at the last, or two meetings ago when this issue was passed, there were some amendments made that by the chairman of the committee that were an effort to restore language that was being deleted. And in drafting the legislation and for easing the voluminous nature of the existing code and printing all 125 pages, sections that are not being affected are not in appearance, but they're condensed to a parentheses to move from section to section where there are no changes being made. So to answer your question, yes, the historic nature amendment was done by, I believe it was Chairman Ricks at the last two meetings ago, and therefore no changes to that section are there. So for the ease of reading the lengthy ordinance, it is not printed in that way, but it remains intact in full effect in law.
Had I known that, I would have had comments on that section for what is missing, because we have a historic district commission that gets wiped off the map with those changes, unless you're going to keep them intact. So if I saw that back in this version, with the blue and red, I would have said, okay, we still have all Stonewall Review, Historic Commission, and Council, maybe that's your intent, that this still functions as a commission and they still do these reviews. But it's very confusing to the public because we already saw one version and then it's gone. The text is just completely gone. And what I was expecting is blue and red to show, okay, by amendment, this is no longer part of the second passage. So I have asked around. Other people are confused with the same issue. It didn't translate well to the public. There is a correction, though. The historic districts, in the section that is in the second passage, historic districts are determined by the Rhode Island Historical and Heritage Preservation Commission. It just says whatever's on our zoning map. I mean, I'd go back to the source, the authorities, and that's the Historic Preservation Commission. And that's in, that first and only section dealing with historics in section 311. So my comments, I just ran with under the heading Special Use Permit, which is page 40 and 41. And in attending the planning board meeting when this was discussed and voted on for favorable advisory opinion, we learned through the solicitor at the meeting why the special use permit exercise was important and why this list was important. Because the applicant and developers want to see an embedded list for each S, so they don't have to go back to the comprehensive plan and the zoning ordinance. Because as you notice, that line is struck and through for the comprehensive plan and zoning. So we're making it easier for developers. And why is this important? Because they know what team to bring of experts to get the application through. So I think this is a good thing. However, we're too light on the environmental. We didn't take enough from our comp plan and put it in here. And it has to be under special use permit. And I still question if we're not following state law. It's a legal opinion, I don't know, but Cranston's differing than Warwick. If we need to have this list done for each S in the table. So I ran with the system we were working with and I just added to the general list. And I put in environmental. And I took this list from things you probably heard in testimony come before you from experts for land development projects. I took it from the comprehensive plan, our existing zoning, the planning board land development regulations, and from what I've heard in testimony and witnesses coming forward. So these are my recommendations, and they specifically have to tie in to the special use permit. So they need to be under the heading, special use permit. I know there's more discussion later on about special conditions. These are, if you want to call it, the hoops that the developer and applicant has to jump through. So they know ahead of time what issues to address and which experts to hire. And that all makes sense. So we're weak on the environmental. And we're very concerned about this, that no adverse environmental impacts or adverse impacts to environmentally sensitive areas or contaminated areas. Why are we sensitive about this? Contaminated areas, our zoning ordinance for solar that was citizen-driven, and it was a great team effort with the council and the mayor and the planning department. Director Kravis's great work and credit to him. By special use permit, large-scale solar projects are permitted in hazardous waste brownfields. So I wanted to make sure that still is a special use permit and that this project be evaluated, that it doesn't do further damage to the contaminated site. Could be soil disturbance, could be floodplain issues, whatever it may be. So we're sensitive to special use permits. So I added that for environmental. That's the main environmental. I put no adverse impacts to archaeological historic resources. That comes out of our comp plan. It's a whole section of cultural resources. We have a whole section of natural resources for environmental. The no decrease in surrounding property values. I know I've heard testimony by real estate experts, appraisers, when the question comes up with commercial development near residential properties. So I think that's a good one to put in. No adverse impacts to on-street parking and loading areas. We just added an S for two-family dwellings. And the first question we always got, I feel like I'm a real old-timer now, but the question I've always heard was, what about parking? You're having an in-law. You're having an attached new structure with other people living there.
Oh, we're actually past 10 minutes. So do we have a motion to grant the speaker an additional 3 minutes?
So moved. Second.
All in favor? Aye. Aye.
Thank you for being so gracious. I've keep you very factual, I hope. So the first question anybody asks about an in-law is, well, where are they going to park? So that's why I added, and I took that directly from our zoning ordinance, no adverse impacts to on-street parking and loading areas. That's just a bring down from our zoning ordinance. Then no adverse impacts to public drinking water supplies and private wells. That's from our comp plan. We do have one residence in Warwick that is on a private well. They're not connected to any municipal water. So I added that one in there. I think I've gone through my list. The stormwater was nice. That was already in there. I added a clarification, which I think most engineers recognize this. I'm not an engineer, but I've just repeated here. No net increase in the rate of peak stormwater runoff. Meaning when you have a grassed area and you go to pavement, the runoff runs faster from a rainstorm than it does on grassed area. So the peak rate has to be absorbed by the developer, and that's why they spend the money and the construction for stormwater basins. So that's the reason why we do stormwater basins, is to ensure that the rate of flow remains the same pre-construction and post-construction. So these are all just things that I dug up from zoning comp plan that I hope could be put in here. But the bigger question is, do we have to do this list for every S? Because the S's vary for different kinds of uses. Or is this one list good enough? Cranston thinks they have to do a specific list for each S. That's why they don't have time for the January deadline. They're changing all their S's to no's. So that answer I'm kind of curious about. Thank you.
Through the chair.
Please.
Ms. Comer, I wanted to go back to when you started your comments. You made reference to some opinion issued by the attorney for the planning board.
Public document, right. It was on the planning board's agenda, I want to say in September of 2023, when you got a list of all the projects and applications, that memo came up. The date of the memo, which I have it on my phone, I could email to you, is July 5th of 2023. And in there, it reads, I think that you have to do a list for each S. So you really take the time for each type of project and the criteria for the special use permit.
And did you attended most of these meetings, I would imagine?
Well, there's only one planning board meeting, right?
Yeah. And so the planning board obviously sent us a document that did not include the list of reasons per each S.
Right.
Do you have any... anecdotes from conversation from those meetings?
Just the solicitor said that this list was he thinks, wanted by the developers in that legislation. Why it was helpful is because they knew, I want to call it, what hoops to jump through, what was critical in the community from their comp plan and zoning ordinance, because that line is struck and through. So you replace zoning ordinance and comp plan with your specifics. So you kind of spoon feed the applicant and developer, because now they just go to one place. And the solicitor said that this way they know, the developer knows what are the critical issues and again, what experts would need to be hired. In all due respect, this was a huge document that everybody, to the planning board's credit, the planning department's credit, the solicitor's credit of the planning board, they took on a big task in a short period of time. And I'm only looking at this today because my friend called from Cranston, and Cranston has a different opinion of what their interpretation is. Of course, the state's nowhere to give guidance here. Everybody's kind of doing their own thing. But what I don't want to have happen is this goes forward and we're challenged by a developer because we don't have a specific list for each S in that table. That's the worst thing I want to have happen, because then we have a mess. I'd rather clean it up here and find out what I know planning board solicitor opinion, your council solicitor, city solicitor. I don't know how many eyes need to be on this. I think it's pretty clear that it was supposed to be for each S.
If I may, I believe that it would be for each category, mm-hmm. which is a little bit different because, for example, for use code 101.1, a two-family, mm-hmm. there are a number of different zones that would all be by special use permit, but it would all be one particular category. Generally speaking, compared to a lot of other cities and towns that I've seen, Warwick does not employ special use permits as at nearly the same rate. But I would be interested in the council solicitor's opinion on whether it would be necessary to have the specific criteria listed as to each of these different categories.
Well, I would suggest that the planning board attorney reviewed the ordinance and the recent laws enacted by the General Assembly, drafted required changes, held hearings before the planning board, which voted their recommendations to us, and proceeded to the draft that you see before you. To answer the Ms. Komar's more specific question, if you look to the lines 7, 8, and 9 on page 40, the council has suggested to us that it can be achievable as that the language reads, the specific and objective criteria below shall apply to all uses listed as S in the use table. The planning board shall determine which standards apply on a case-by-case basis. So it is like all the itemized items that you see that follow, and that the planning board has been empowered with the discretion on.
Thank you. Let's see. I would turn to the council president at this time, as it is past 7 o'clock. I'm not sure if you would desire for the committee to finish up at this time, or for us to continue into the time for the regular city council meeting.
Let's have the next speaker come up, the next member of the public come up to speak on this, and then I know we have the administration is here to speak as well. So let's hear from all the residents, and we'll keep going. Then we'll start the full council meeting after that.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Maureen McNamara, and I'm here about the changes proposed. I have some questions and some comments. As an abutter of a commercial property, one of my biggest concerns is the special use permit. There's verbiage that was added right above section 301.1. And it looks like it essentially gives full power to the building official to deem anything a permitted use without having to go to the planning or zoning board. And I wanted some clarification on that.
If the planning director would be able to comment on that.
Hi, Tom Kravitz, the city planning director. What was the section exactly? Do you have the page number?
So in the abbreviated version, it's on page 5. Is it? It's a new paragraph that was added.
In 301 under districts, you mean?
Yep. It's right above it in blue. The zoning ordinance provides a listing of all land uses.
Yeah, that's older language that's in state law currently. Every zoning ordinance in the state of Rhode Island and various cities and towns, they treat this differently. Some towns take that judgment call and power away from the building official. Some do not. In this case, we do have where our building official can make a determination.
So this here says that this was added in. This is new verbiage. So this was added in.
Right.
So it gives power to the building official to circumvent and just hand out special use permits regardless. So I could have a chemical plant put in next to my home because the building official decides that that's okay.
Any use not specifically listed, not necessarily special use permits. I wouldn't use the term circumventing as much as empowering the building official to make a judgment call in a gray area with respect to use description. That's how I'd look at that.
So it's a pretty big loophole. So there's a protection that we lost as residents, I think, by putting that paragraph in. I think it should be taken out. Just as what I've gone through, the property that I have, what was put in next to me, really falls under 3 different special use permits, and they kind of slid in there, and my life has been a nightmare since they moved in. My other concern is 304.5, where they put more than one non-residential use or building on a lot. They removed all the restrictions there as well. As a residential abutter to commercial properties, it's worrisome because you can stack as many as you want into some of these commercial properties. You know, you look at a lot like Target, you could just plop as many things as you want in there. And there's a lot of residents that abut these commercial properties in Warwick. If you think about it, if you drive through, the majority of the city abuts some kind of commercial property. So this ordinance change that was pushed through very rapidly. It obviously favors developers. And I agree with the woman before me. They need to come up with more categories, spend a little bit more time on this, maybe send it back to planning. Hold it for further study before you vote tonight, and just make sure that all the loopholes are covered and the residents are protected. That's all I'm asking for. Thank you.
Sorry about that. Barbara Walsh, Ward 2. I'm here to comment on the things that Michelle Comar raised, and I don't want to repeat them because I won't do her justice. I don't hold in my head all of that kind of detail that she so articulately expressed to you. So I don't feel the need to try to repeat any of that, but it's her content that I want to comment on. I've been around long enough to understand that there are very influential people here in Warwick and in the state that can present their cases in formidable ways that get their clients exactly what they want, whether there are variances needed or special use permits or this, that, or the other thing. Things happen that are really skirting the edges of what should happen given protections for our environment. And as you know, I am a fanatic about the environment and our need to protect it from everything we can possibly protect it from, because we're losing it. This world is dying around us. I am absolutely convinced of that, given the research. And I implore you not to take shortcuts for the sake of deadlines or timelines. When you can offer protections for the future, the planning folks are well regarded for their concerns for the future and planning for the future. I would ask that you consider that from the council's legislative perspective as well. You are here to set a foundation for what other councils will do 3 years, 5 years, 20 years from now, in an effort to try to anticipate the scenarios that will ultimately arise and for which you can provide protections right now. And I am seriously, genuinely asking you to take the time, whether it's tonight or in January or soon coming up, to protect what needs to be protected by following what the new legislation requires, by stating the specifics, the objective specifics of what categories will be used to protect against development or enhanced corporate building or whatever. I just ask you to think about the future in that regard. Thank you.
Leslie Derrig, 84 Dundas Ave. I'm here primarily to talk about, I did go to the meeting that was with the planning department, and we discussed, we had quite a few people come forward and express the discontent with the legislation that was required for Warwick to go through with. And there wasn't anybody speaking in favor of it except for the people who are developers. This all seems to be being rammed down our throats. I don't think there's any thought that went into it other than the developers and the contractors are looking for an easy pass to get through with what they want to develop and what they want to manufacture. What bothered me even more was that everybody that was there, and I'm talking about even the solicitor, I'm talking about the planning department, nobody spoke in favor of it. They spoke about the problems of it. And nobody was happy with it. And so when I hear comments that, you know, that they voted for it, well, they were kind of told to vote for it because they had to, that they had no choice. And that's the truth. If you read the minutes, they said they had no choice because Representative Shikarchke was told, that has told everybody that they have to get it through, that this is to be passed by every community. What then happened is I heard that other cities and towns in the state have come forward and said, Shikarchi was telling everybody that Warwick approved it with no problem. And I, for one, would like to see Warwick go back to Representative Shikarchi and say, that's not true. Warwick did not approve this. Nobody approved it. We just felt we had to pass it because you're telling us we had to pass it. Then I would also like to ask Representative Shikarchi, and I think Warwick should ask him, who pushed this through? Was it the lobbyist for these developers? Who did it? And so that's my take on this, and I'm really disappointed that this is being pushed through so fast and so hard. I really think that somebody ought to push the pause button. Thank you.
Richard Langseth, Budlong Farm Road in Warwick. And I, too, attended that meeting where we went for, it was well over an hour. And it was very rushed. What happened was, in July, the planning department recognized the need for the change, but nothing happened until September. And then there was only one meeting. And I remember people shuffling papers and writing up notes and a very elaborate process, which was all discombobulated, really. And then I had a concern about the development regulations. You know, this is the ordinance. This is an additional piece that the planning department uses called a regulation, and they walk together. And when I was listening earlier, people were saying, well, the planning department will do this or that. Well, the planning department has to do it by the regulation. And this regulation has not been changed since the year 2000. That's 23 years. And I hear nothing about the regulation. All I hear is the ordinance. And I really think that we need to go back to planning, have a workshop, you know, decent workshops talking about both the ordinance and the regulation. When you listen to Michelle Komar, I mean, as I do, I get lost very fast. And the concerns are real. Now people are talking about Mr. Shikarchi, and of course he's my rep, and I support what he does. And what he's trying to do is create more housing for people, which is a great idea for Warwick. I think that we're in a wonderful position to invite new people to the community through the concept of this ordinance. But the details are very important too. At the last planning board meeting 3 or 4 days ago, or I guess it was Wednesday, somebody came forward with a proposal to build 4 units on a single piece of land in the Cohasset area. And I thought it was a very good idea. And it was well executed. And this is the kind of thing we really need to do. But we need to do it carefully. And I would strongly recommend that you folks send it back to planning to have a better understanding of how all this works together. It's extremely important for the city of Warwick. Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Michael Zarum, resident in Ward 2. This is a very, very difficult issue. To start, I want to thank all my fellow residents for their comments tonight, of which I would echo for the record that I agree with everybody's comments before me. I think that Mr. Shikarchi, in trying to create additional housing, is something that's much needed. But I think at the same time, we need to keep in mind the whole purpose of zoning is to keep things well planned. There are different types of zoning, as most of you are aware, based on minimum lot size, how many structures, whether it's a single or multifamily. And those zoning laws are also designed to protect existing owners' interest in property from going down. If somebody lives in a place where they've got, say, a half acre or an acre lot, and all of a sudden there's going to be multifamily on the parcel next to them, it's going to impact the value of their investment, and that's not right. I've also noticed over the last few weeks that other municipalities around the state also are not happy with the state of Rhode Island and the General Assembly forcing this, these new regulations on everybody statewide. I know that people have complained to the Speaker and other people, the General Assembly, about it. What I would ask my own city council to do on this is to look at the deadline, possibly communicate with them, the municipalities around the state, and get together, and what the common interest is, so that we don't have this rammed down our throat. We don't end up with what a lot of people around here call cram zoning. Warwick has a certain nature and is slowly going from farmland to a city of industry. And that's all through zoning. As a lot of people have mentioned before me, that sometimes they'll go through a process where they'll ask for a variance or special use permit or other ways that basically allow the people to violate current zoning. And I think we need to take a look at this. Now, I'd also ask Mr. Solicitor on this one too. I'm told it's required by the state, but since so many people in this community have objected to the terms, is it possible to consider putting some kind of a disclaimer in there so that the state is on notice that most of the people were not in favor of this? And it almost seems anti-democratic that people around the whole state don't agree with having this forced on them, and that doesn't seem like it's democracy to me. And I'm just wondering if there's some way to put some kind of wording in there as a disclaimer that while the city accepts the fact that this is a requirement of the General Assembly, that most of the residents here are not in favor of it, and to consider additional wording like that if possible. And other than that, just to follow up with other municipalities around the state and to show that we're in sync and in union, that most people around the state are not in favor of this legislation. Thank you.
Any comment from the city?
Tom Kravitz, city planning director. Let me just say that, you know, the planning board was concerned about meeting the January 1st timeframe. They looked at what we drafted as staff, and the solicitor for the planning board, Mr. Petracca, looked at it, and they felt comfortable in forwarding a positive recommendation to you. I think we feel we don't want to go into January 1st having nothing adopted. There's other standards as to the objective and specific standards by category. You know, we're making them apply to all, thereby encapsulating each specific category too. So that's something we're deliberately going to test that and see where it goes. Petracca and myself were confident to forward it to you as written. So I don't think the sky's going to fall on, you know, January 1st as we get running with this. We're anxious to see how it works. It's correct that I'm working on the subdivision regulations now that'll accompany this. Of the two codes, it's slightly less important. Zoning is more important, so that's why we tackled that one first. And I'll just leave it at that. I think it's sufficient. We're going to be able to protect the environment, deal with traffic in a professional manner, just like we've always been doing. There'll be more on the planning board's plate, that's for sure, through unified development review. But they're ready to meet the challenge. So I would encourage that the council adopt it as presented.
One follow-up question. I know that one of the speakers specifically brought up section 304.5 that's entitled more than one non-residential use or building on a lot. And the revised version of the first paragraph would read, more than one non-residential structure may be allowed on a single lot with an within appropriately zoned non-residential districts, provided, however, that such uses shall be only those that are permitted within the district in question. There's a concern just from the reading of that plain language that this would result in buildings basically right next to each other, perhaps encroaching on residential structures, on neighboring lots. But would the provisions of 304.5 have any effect on dimensional setbacks or the like?
Potentially, but we'll take them on a case-by-case basis. 304.11 is the adaptive reuse section. That is also an area where you could see potential conversions of non-residential uses to residential and or mixed income, mixed-use purposes. So we're aware of it, but we're comfortable with it.
And so a dimensional variance, would that still be necessary?
No. No, the planning board will act through unified development review in that capacity, just like the zoning board would act. They would make similar findings.
Just to be clear, if there is an appropriately zoned non-residential district and a lot on that, a commercial lot, and it's a commercial property, it would not be necessary for the property owner to comply with dimensional variances, the various setbacks, if that property owner, say, wanted to build a building that's literally, say, 1 foot or 2 feet away from a property line?
No, those situations, we, with all applications, we get input from staff, that being the other city departments, you know, police, fire, DPW, and I would think that in that type of scenario, if there's a 1 foot setback, you said from property line, but if that should be for another building that's a foot off of that property line, then fire code and things like that will take precedence in the application. All these things are, they really are case by case basis. And anything that might not be even listed as a particular standard, it can come in, it can get injected into the process, and the planning board can put conditions on all these applications. So I'm confident in that.
And so that would be part of a process for a special use permit when it comes to those, that example under 304.5 of the multiple non-residential buildings on one lot?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. I'll open this up. Comments, questions, members of the council? Councilman Lattiser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Kravitz, if this were to pass tonight in its current form, will it be possible to offer amendments to it in the future?
Yes. Yeah, you can make amendments, can even amend your comprehensive plan up to, I think it's 4 times a calendar year. You're right. Nothing's okay. Set in stone forever. If you find something's not working, you can propose an amendment.
That's that was an important answer for me, anyways. I want to also comment on one of the concerns that was expressed in the beginning regarding 311.4, which is not in our package on the sub A. And this speaks to sometimes, while unintentional, it speaks to confusion. And it speaks to the members of the general public who are not necessarily privy to some of the procedures that take place. Fortunately, I kept my PCO 24-23, the original version. What we have in front of us this evening is 24-23 sub A. I can see where confusion would enter with the public, thinking that that entire paragraph 311.4 through 311.10 was eliminated, because that's exactly what I thought coming into this chamber this evening. When I was going through this again, a very substantial document later this afternoon, that's one of the things that came to mind. I would thank Councilman Sinapi because he spoke to my concern about that at the beginning of the meeting. I would think that when you go from a PCO, PCR, whatever, whatever, to a sub A, that everything in the sub A should include the language that was in the original document. The original document that we had from the last meeting this was discussed was 50 pages. The one that we have this evening is 48 pages. So my point is, sometimes, you know, in this new desire to eliminate paper, that we also sometimes cause unintentional consequences. And this is one of them. It can create a confusion, because it did for me, and it can create a confusion for members of the public who don't do this every day or all the time. And that was a great question. Where is it? And thanks to Councilman Sinapi and Solicitor Walsh for explaining that, so I was clear with it. I don't have a problem with, you know, what's in the sub A. I'm just making a point about sometimes too little is a problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Comment? Councilman Sinapi.
So not to beat a dead horse, but I think it's safe to say nobody's happy with the fact that we're being forced to adopt changes as required by state law, but unfortunately we are required by state law to adopt those changes, and we have to comply whether we like it or not. I am heartened though by what Director Kravitz pointed out, where we're apparently going to be watching this closely to see how things actually shake out and to amend accordingly as needed. And hopefully we can work in the suggestions by the public, especially with the whole workshop factor, because if this is a kind of voluntold situation where we're being forced to try these things, then we might as well at least watch them closely and have input from all eyes who have thoughts on this. Because even if you just look at the section for the state law, chapter 4523, a lot of things are getting changed. It's not just one section, it's most of it. And you can see all the effective until January 1st and then effective post. This is not a small alteration statewide. So if we can see issues develop, the quicker we learn of them, the quicker we can fix them. So thank you, Director Kravitz, for your testimony in that regard, because that is makes me at least hopeful that these won't be as draconian as they seem, at least not for long, if so.
Further comment? Members of the committee or members of the council? Councilman Gebhard.
Just two questions. Back to the question that Councilman Lattiser asked about if we find certain things to not be working, so on and so forth. Obviously, nothing's written entirely in stone, but my understanding is these changes are being dictated by state law. So in the absence of a change in state law, most of these changes would be unchangeable. Would that be correct?
Yeah, I think I know what you're saying. Yeah, if had state law not proposed the changes, then we wouldn't have to.
Yeah. Okay. So then I guess I just flipped to the state law that's referenced here, 452452, which says that cities shall incorporate these changes, such and such by the date. So I guess, merits aside, what are our options in terms of adopting or not adopting? I mean, is there an option to not? If we don't, do they become effective as a matter of state zoning code? And then we are just out of compliance with what in effect are the actual rules?
No, I think when talking with the solicitor for the planning board, you want to be in a position where you've adopted your local regulations. So you're in a position to deal with applications and make findings on their legal records, which of course could be appealable to the new court that the statute's creating. But to do nothing, I think we felt that would be a bigger risk. So we wanted to take a stab at it here.
That makes sense. So given that applicants would have the right to appeal, showing that we've at least made the effort to integrate these changes into our overall zoning strategy gives us some sort of leg to stand on in terms of appeal, where the absence maybe gives us a weaker position in terms of appeal.
Correct.
And in some of these cases that, we've heard from members of the public, these changes don't, strip our, planning and zoning boards of any ability to, restrict what happens within the city, right? There's still...
Correct. It doesn't strip the authority. It kind of reallocates it, I would say, between zoning and planning board. And it does open up the potential for infill and maybe in some of the big box areas, should they be struggling, the older plazas along, the West Shore roads and for potential mixed use development through adaptive reuse. So,
okay, thanks. And then to Ms. Komar's email from earlier today, and she read through her points here. These all sound familiar from having sat through several planning meetings and hearing applicants, but my assumption is that all these would continue to be a part of the lens that we look at projects through, right? In terms of, water runoff, I think that's a
right.
DEM, is another state regulation, right?
Right, we're capturing them anyway through the DEM process. Archaeological is standard. We do that. We had to submit for a review through HPHC for that anyway.
Decrease in surrounding property values is that one challenging.
It's
kind of subjective.
I don't know if I'd put that in as a standard anyway, because it's so many things that affect property value besides zoning.
Right.
Zoning, frankly, people think it affects values, but interest rates, pandemics, weather catastrophes, their housing production or lack thereof, mm-hmm. Being in between New York and Boston, that affects property value.
Impacts to parking and loading.
There are other sections in the code for that. I'm comfortable with passing as it is because we've got all these items covered is what I meant to say.
In relation to the duplex, the new, permissions around a duplex. I thought there are associated parking components to that. Is that right for the two family? 101A.
Are you looking at the version for this evening's meeting?
I'm probably not. But are there some controls around parking related to the two family, or does it mirror essentially a single family?
I'd have to look at the use table to say. But we're going to handle like we do with all two. I need either two or 2.5 spaces per unit.
And then public drinking water and private wells, that would be covered already in state and local regs?
Correct.
All right. Well, I appreciate your, you know, that the sky's not going to start falling, but it does feel like something we need to remain vigilant on as we start to see applications come in. You know, folks showing interest in building homes in Warwick, certainly not a bad thing, but it needs to be managed. So thanks for the work on this so far, and I'm sure the work that you will continue to do in the upcoming weeks, months, and years. Thank you.
I'll also just add that while I think that Ms. Komar raises some valid concerns here, I do think that, the standards is set forth in 906.3. They do lay these out pretty expansively, clearly. It covers a lot of territory, and certainly, of course, the state building code, various other codes would always still be in effect and applicable here. As the planning director pointed out, the decrease in property value, that type of criteria, that can be a very tricky one to try to enforce, especially in light of everything else that can affect property values more negatively or positively for that matter. In fact, perhaps by coincidence, I was reading through some different zoning opinions and appeals to the Superior Court, decisions of the Supreme Court earlier today regarding zoning appeals. And there are some cities that have, at least in the past, used a decrease in property value to as a criteria that the planning board, zoning board could consider. And as I look at some of those decisions where that criteria was raised, it seems like it's just rife for vagueness and litigation, because I kept seeing some different decisions in which there were competing experts stating, for example, that a particular enlargement of a residential dwelling would decrease the value of surrounding property owners' properties, while another expert would come in and say that it has zero effect or perhaps potentially increases the value for neighbors' property values. It's, for better or worse, a bit of an amorphous criteria. I think that there certainly are quite a few standards under 906.3 that are all listed out there, including regarding the, well, I don't intend to read off 2 pages here, but they certainly relate to, I'm looking at 906.3 subsection C, and then there's the list of 1 through 8, and that's in addition to some of the other subsections. This is on pages 40 through 41 on the abbreviated version. So we see that various standards apply, that the intended use does not create a degradation in level of service with respect to traffic circulation. Intended use respects and enhances the architectural character of the surrounding area. The intended use minimizes light pollution using dark sky techniques. We also have standards relating to minimizing stormwater impacts and standards that the intended use will not exceed local noise regulations. So the city would certainly not be giving up control in quite a wide host of different areas here if it were to pass this evening. I'll also point out that for the legitimate concerns that can be had, of course, about any major change to the zoning ordinance, and this is, of course, a comprehensive change to the zoning ordinance, and there are going to be valid concerns that are going to be voiced when it comes to anything of this wide nature. There are a lot of what I would view as very positive changes here as well, including, for example, changes to the process for building a two-family home on one's property. I also, not to get into too many details here, don't want to make this too long an evening, but the removal of certain regulations regarding swimming pools. Obviously, regulations as part of the state building code and the like would still apply, but I always found it a little bit unnecessary for one to receive a special use permit to have a swimming pool that was within, say, 14 feet of a property line instead of 15 feet of a property line. Well, with all that said, is there any further discussion, members of the council?
No, I'm asked that you take a vote, move it to the full floor at this time.
Do we have a motion?
I move to move this item to the full floor.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The committee adjourns at 7:48 p.m.
Thank you very much. There's a sign-up sheet here for public comment, so if you want to sign up right there where Mr. Cody is, there's sign up there. Please sign up. We will do that. We're going to start the council meeting in 2 minutes.